Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna.
That is caught! Touchdown! Oh my gosh! How did that happen? He's got it from 59 yards away for the win!
Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Community First Credit Union, Carrie Limousine, Wachovia, Sonny's Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
Good evening. Welcome in on a Wednesday evening to Everbank Field. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, only on News Talk Radio WOKV. I'm Brian Sexton. Jeff Loggeman's here. John Osher is back with us after a two-week hiatus. Fully moved in. How are you?
We're getting there. But it, as anybody who's moved knows, it's a long process with a lot of boxes.
Are the boxes at least in the garage?
They're hanging out of the garage, but they're there.
Wow.
They're there. It's a process, but it's fun.
And everyone glad to be back in Jacksonville?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's we've been gone for 10 years, and I've been back a few months, and the family's just getting in the last couple of days. And, the 14-year-old's getting used to the concept, but, overall we're back, and, it's a good move.
About November, December is when the 14-year-olds say, you know what, this ain't so bad.
Yeah, it'll I've got to get him to the beach. Being 14, I think he'll like the beach.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, bikini,
sure.
Skin.
Can't beat that.
All right, so the phone number this evening is 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Just a real quick update. There really isn't an update.
No.
Well, I mean, since last week, the only update is that they are talking without attorneys present, which is a good thing. I guess they had a meeting in Chicago last week. This week, the meetings are supposed to be secret, but it's almost impossible to keep a secret when you have negotiations or talks of this nature. But they're going on in New York, and they're continuing to talk, and they're continuing to maintain, I guess you could call it, the code of silence about the meeting. So that's all good. We'll see, though.
That feels to me, when I was reading that this week, although there's very, few details coming out and maybe even very little progress being made, I've thought all along that it's going to get done with something like that.
Yeah.
There's going to be secret meetings between people saying, all right, it's all great what's being said. Let's get together and figure something out. And I've always thought that the decision is going to come as a surprise. It's going to come sort of out of the blue where you start hearing reports of, hey, something's getting done, something started to roll. That can't be a bad thing if they're in a room and trying to keep it quiet.
No, and Brian, we were talking last week, might have been the week before, and we were talking about timelines. And I'd said last week, I said, was there really a point in time where they said, okay, it has to be done by this date? Did they really have a reason to negotiate in February and March? No. Now they're starting to approach that deadline because, I mean, the timeline that we talked about was, sometime in that first week of July, at the latest, something has to get done.
Yeah, if you want to have a preseason.
So now, it takes time to get to that point. So I think both sides are starting to see that. Hey, if we're going to get something done by that timeline, it's going to take time to progress to that point. We got to start now. And so
I think the other thing, Jeff,
thing.
Is in the last time there was a lockout or a strike was 87.
Strike.
Right. Well, the last time there was a work stoppage where you had sides who were having to figure something out. There was no free agency at that point, so there were not 500 veterans.
No, you could have gotten it done right before the day you were supposed to report.
Now you've got 500 people out there whose future is uncertain, and even if they do get something done, they've got 2 or 3 weeks where they've got to get signed with teams. So I think there is a little more urgency. They can't have this thing be going on in September 15th because it's going to take them weeks just to find out where they're going to be. There's more urgency.
The best that we figured out, John, we were trying to figure out what it would take. Once the agreement is reached, how long would it take to actually play a game? And what, Brian, we were thinking 6 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, because you wanted 3 weeks of training camp.
3 weeks of camp to get ready to play a game. And that's really cutting it close.
Right.
But then you're going to need 3 weeks, and that's cutting it close, too, to complete free agency and to sign everybody, your draft picks, the undrafted rookie class, et cetera.
So our timeline.
I've got to think these free agents that are out there now, I've got to think they're starting to make calls to the leadership saying, look, we got to get some, you know, I've got to think they're feeling urgent for the first time at this point.
Our timeline was along this way. I mean, if you take that six-week window, right, a three-week free agency offseason and a three-week training camp and back it up from September the 11th. So if you want to start the season on time, you have to have a deal done by August 1st. That's 6 weeks. Now, if you want to start the preseason on time, you have to have a deal done by July 1st because starting the preseason on time is August 7th. That means that the Rams and the Bears have to go to training camp July 23rd.
Well,
to have their 3 weeks
and I
to
like
get ready.
That timeline better because the one thing that we haven't talked about here, and then the league finally came out this week and was honest about it, is that, you know, ticket sales are off, sponsorship is certainly off, and you got to have time to put fannies in the seats. And so, you know, having that window of no preseason games and just getting right to the regular season, that probably won't work for ticket sales.
Right. Yeah.
In order to get ticket sales kind of done in there as well, you're going to need the preseason to do that.
And I think the big thing to note from our perspective, meaning Jacksonville's perspective, is I've been getting a lot of emails in the Ozone the last 3 or 4 weeks about Jaguars ticket sales being down. It's not, you know, it's not a Jaguars
issue. It's a league
issue. It's a league issue. And I'm glad the league put that out there this week so that the perception that somehow Jacksonville was slow in tickets compared to the rest of the league.
Jacksonville was the only market that was up front.
Right.
Everybody else
precisely.
Was, you know,
transparent.
Pulling
precisely.
The wool
this
over
is not
the
a Jackson. You know, I don't think the Jaguars are struggling any more than 80% of the teams out there.
Right. It's become the norm in the league, especially right now.
Why wouldn't it?
Yeah. There's no reason. Right. I might even argue, Logs, you talked about how they didn't have an impetus to negotiate in February and March. They might have been able to negotiate and avoid a lot of the public relations problems and the ticket sales and sponsorship issues if they had started talking a little bit earlier. I understand that's not the predominant amount of money, but they might have been able to avoid that headache if they had started talking earlier.
You might have been, but, you know, I think each side thought that they could gain an edge in court.
True.
And to create leverage for their cause, and that clearly really hasn't been the case yet because it seems like in each court, one side has leverage over the other.
Right.
So it's kind of a draw there, and I think they've come to the realization that, hey, we may not get leverage
and now, and now, with the ticket sales being what they are and the off-field issues as they are, you know, they're all starting to feel the heat from some fans and pocketbooks and sponsors. So, Joe, you have something to say?
Do you guys see where I think it's at the end of this month the owners are going to get together and decide whether or not to allow teams to cover seats?
Yeah, I saw something about that.
Yeah, I did. I did see that. I guess, which, you know, this year would be surprised if quite a few of them take advantage of that.
You know, just you're right. I just think it makes sense, though. You're going to have some teams do that because ticket numbers are off around the league.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because of the lockout. They're off around the league. You know, what with the economy being what it is, and that's certainly a mitigating factor. But you also have big screen TVs
right. And
Dish Network where you can watch 8 games at once. You know, in high definition on your couch. And the commissioner said it, I forget, Super Bowl week, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about finding ways to get people back in the stadium for the stadium experience.
By making the experience better to be there.
Exactly.
And it, I mean, it's kind of ironic. The thing that drove this sport for years was it is a great TV sport. And as TVs get greater, it's becoming a greater TV sport.
Oh, yeah.
And it's
as the economy goes.
It is a great TV sport, but you just can't connect with the emotion at the couch.
No
you just can't.
You can't. But out of all the sports, I've always thought it is tailor made for TV more than any of them. To me, I watch hockey and I can't follow it on TV.
Well, hockey is much better in person.
Right. I mean, it's not even close. Most people who've seen a hockey game will tell you see a hockey game and you're a fan for life.
Yep.
Whereas with football, it is a great sport on television, and you know, that now ironically is starting to hurt a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at some of the major sports, I mean, I'm not a basketball fan. I've been a few NBA games, but to me, football is the ultimate television sport. Baseball is the ultimate radio sport. Yes. Hockey is the ultimate in-person sport. Basketball
is good. I mean, I was not a huge NBA fan until I started seeing some NBA games.
You know, the only thing I'll say about basketball, and I used to do college basketball, is that you can see their face, and you can hear the coach in the interaction because they're right there near the announcers. So there is an element of a more You know, you remember NFL Europe when you worked over there and they had coaches mic'd up and they allowed live. There's more of that in basketball. So I think basketball is a good sport, if you like it, for television. The thing about football is it's our culture.
Right.
I mean, it's overtaken baseball. And so watching it on TV is – Monday Night Football is in and of itself a television experience.
Sure.
It just is. It always was.
All right, so John, last week, we to try to avoid all the legal talk, which we're going to end at once we go to a break here.
Yeah, we're done with it.
We threw out an idea for this week's show, and we're going to give you the commercial break to work on it, and that's all you get, okay, because you're a writer, so we expect you to be able to come up with a list very quickly. Name the top five best free agent acquisition the Jaguars have ever had, and then also your five worst.
And with that, let's go to a break.
Yeah. So all you get is the break, because me and Brian have ours.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
More after this. We'll host the first ever movie night at Everbank Field, Friday, June 24th. Starts at 8:30. They're showing The Blind Side. You know Sandra Bullock. Scoreboard at Everbank Field from the field or the south end zone seats. So come on down. It's open to season ticket holders only, though. Gates open at 7:30. Discounted merchandise and concessions available, including $2 draft beers. You'll need a ticket to enter if you are a season ticket holder, so call 633-2000 and enjoy The Blind Side from the field at Everbank Field Friday night, June 24th at 8:30. Sexton, Lagerman, Osher, Fortunato, and we're going through now. And last-minute tweaks to the best five and the worst five. So Osh is feverishly trying to get caught up on the last 10 years or so.
In about five minutes.
Three of my worst came from that era. Logs, you want to start? Where do you want to start? You want to start best? You want to start worst?
No, let's start with the bad so we can end on a positive note.
All right.
How about that?
Okay.
My top five worst free agent signings, I'll start with Cleo Lemon at five.
Okay.
You let a quarterback go that you could have kept for virtually the same money or less, and Mark Brunell, a proven starter,
right,
to sign a guy that nobody around the league wanted in Cleo Lemon, and gave him, I think, a 3-year, $8.1 million contract. Huh?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That was bad. That's my number five. Number four would be Hugh Douglas. Boy, I wish the Jaguars would have tried to get him back when he left the Jets to go to Philadelphia, because that was the time to get him. By the time they got him and gave him 5 years and $27 million, he only ended up with 3.5 sacks. Not real strong. So the money didn't pay off there. At number three would be Bryce Pop. I was around when Bryce came in, gave him a pretty hefty contract, you know, did good things in Buffalo and Green Bay alongside Reggie White and Bruce Smith, came here, and I hate to say this, but I thought he was one of the biggest me guys I've ever played with.
Really?
Yeah.
They tried to sign him the same year they tried to sign you in 95.
Well, and they got the better end of that deal in 95, I can tell you that. But he was a me guy.
Yeah.
You know, I was detested in the locker room. Is that the proper term?
Disliked. Detest? Yeah.
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 And I don't know if, John, if you were still here at that point, but I don't know if you got that feel or 99. Not.
Yeah, just never fit in. I never got the idea that he wasn't trying.
Yeah.
But it was just... It was also a bad fit. It was just not the right guy for that.
No, well, wasn't the right guy for the locker room. I remember at the time, you know, he wanted to kind of do his own thing working out wise, which is fine if that's once you kind of complete what the program is with our strength and conditioning coach, Jerry Palmieri, but he just wanted to kind of buck the whole system, and then it just didn't work. Didn't make many friends. Now, number one and two, and I could not remember and could not find the number which cost the team more. Because at the top two, you have Drayton Florence and Jerry Porter.
It's not even close. Is it?
But, I mean, to me, the real determining factor there, who holds number one, is who cost the most money up front.
Right.
And I don't remember who cost more up front, because they both stuck around for 1 year.
Yeah.
And then they were jettisoned.
Porter got $10 million up front.
Florence, but I don't think, might have got a little bit more.
He did get a little bit more.
So Florence will take number one, and Porter will take number two.
Okay. But to me, I mean... Florence was at least an argument that maybe he had something left. Porter was league-wide universally.
And he came in here and he was a jerk from the first
what
day
in the?
Here.
I mean, it was a what in the world.
What did you do that for?
They
do,
and it wasn't even a looking back. Yeah. It was that day.
Oh, yeah,
it
what
was,
are you doing?
What? I mean, it was you know, and it was such a keystone day of the franchise turn. I mean, I wasn't here, but looking back,
oh, you could see it from Indianapolis.
It was just
yeah. And here's the thing: when you look at my list, Florence, Lemon, Porter, Douglas, I believe too, was all the Shaq Harris era.
Sure.
Yes. Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and then the missed draft picks in there, yeah, we're double ouch. I'll add a couple names. I put Kelvin Pritchett on there because he came in with a big contract in 95, and that just never worked.
Yeah, but you know what? KP, that's what we called him, KP was okay in the locker room.
Yeah, he wasn't a bad guy.
No, wasn't a bad guy, played hard, certainly was disruptive with the coaching staff, yeah. but in that time period, he wasn't the only one that was not real happy about some of the things that old TC was putting on the team.
Also, to me, he at least had a few productive. He was not a superstar defensive tackle,
good player.
But he was not bad on the level of Porter.
Yeah, but Michael Hugh gave him a big deal.
Oh, sure,
and,
sure.
And so I looked at that one and saw his. I'm with you on Porter.
So
and
is he on your list?
Oh, yeah, he's
on your list.
He's five. Okay. Drayton Florence and Jerry Porter I put together at four. I had Bryce Paup, Hugh Douglas, and then I went with Carnell Lake, and not because of the kind of guy he was, but because of the money they put into him. You know, they restructured his contract a couple of times. I think he gave them 18 games total over the 2 years he was here, and he took home, best I can recall, $18 million.
And he was done when he came in the door.
He came in what year, 99?
99,
yeah.
But he did make the Pro Bowl.
It was on name.
I know that.
Yeah.
I just wanted to throw that out there.
And he's a great guy. I don't want to take any. Yeah. I don't want to put him with the Bryce Paups and the Jerry Porters and the Drayton Florences and Kelvin Pritchetts. But I do, because of the magnitude of the money and where this franchise was against their cap, he was one of the guys that pushed it to the brink.
As good a guy as you can deal with,
yeah.
I would put on the level of Jeff, who was as good a player as I dealt with as a media guy. Carnell was terrific.
And by the way, they didn't sign this guy. They tried. They signed him to one of those transition. Those were also different back then.
Gilbert Brown.
No. Alonzo Spellman.
Okay.
He had his deal matched by Chicago. But remember, he turned nuts.
Yeah, they tried. They tried to get him on this list.
And Quentin Coriat, too. You remember Coriat, the week after the Colts matched his deal back in 96, he was arrested brandishing a gun at a police officer.
Yeah.
Now, I've got a guy on this list, and I can't remember if he came in a trade or free agent, Hardy Nickerson.
Yeah, he came as a free agent.
He was a free agent.
They
gave him guaranteed money, and it was another one of those deals that 99, 2000, 2001 era, I think he signed in 2000.
It was.
When they were just... Some of the free agents early were very, very good, and then they just started trying to piece that one more guy. And to me, Nickerson defined that in the sense that I didn't think he was a very good locker room guy. And for what you're paying, to pay a middle linebacker big free agent money, and it's been 10 years, so my memory's sketchy. I think some of it was even guaranteed. Like a salary guarantee, even beyond a signing bonus, he had guaranteed money in a couple of the back years, I think, which is just unheard of in the NFL. And they were clearly trying to get around the cap, trying to figure out something, you know. And I thought Nickerson, I had Nickerson on my list with Porter, Pop, Florence, and Lake.
Okay. So you want to go best?
We got time.
Let's take a break. News is next, then we'll give you the best on our list. Here on a Wednesday evening in June on News Talk Radio, WOKV, depend on it. All right, welcome back. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, John Osher, Joe Fortunato, Jaguars this week. We're doing the five best and five worst free agents. And before we do the five best, let me throw a couple of the names at you just to evaluate. How about Andre Rison?
To me, he kind of worked out pretty well. And the reason I say that is because he allowed time for Jimmy Smith to develop.
That's true.
And it really, I think, that point we were at in 96 when Andre kind of got cut loose and we kind of got on a roll, I think that kind of was the impetus or whatever you could say that kind of helped us along. So I don't look at that as a real negative.
Okay. How about you?
And he really wasn't a bad guy. I mean, he just
couldn't put the weed down.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. He's coaching high school football today, by the way.
But he, and a lot of the players, the receivers at the time, including Jimmy, said he had a pretty big influence on him in terms of how to work. And Jimmy and Keenan, I think,
learned a lot from Andre Rison.
And I think he kind of told them at some point, Andre was a pretty good guy at heart, I think.
Yeah.
And I think, from what I remember, Keenan and Jimmy telling me, at some point when he was here, he kind of took both of them aside and said, you guys can play.
He was entertaining, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was definitely entertaining.
You have some stories from some team meetings, I'm sure.
He had one that was pretty good.
But he kind of told both of those guys they could play
at
some point, too, and kind of gave them a little confidence that they could get it done.
Yeah, and this list in between is just your evaluation,
sure,
good or bad. I'll give you another one that was from when you were here originally, Dion Figures, the corner that came from Pittsburgh.
Again, like a lot of those guys during that era, they paid too much for him. If you had gotten him as a second or third round draft pick and gotten that kind of production, he was okay. But I mean, just never panned out to what they thought he would be.
Couple for you, Loggy. Brian Williams.
I think Brian was one of the better. Very productive. I thought that they could have made use of him even past the point where they let him go.
Tony Pashos.
Okay. They paid him way too much money. A non-athletic right tackle that you would have to provide help for and protection, pass protection, to me, you don't give that kind of money to.
All right. So I got a whole lot more than five. I got seven or eight guys. Oh, one more. And this is only good, but John Yurkovic.
To me, he was a consideration for my top five.
Okay.
Because he was a great locker room guy, great student of the game. The years that we had Brant Boyer, who, by the way, I talked to this past weekend.
Did you?
And John Yurkovic in the locker room, there was never a dull moment.
Yeah. Yeah, you had some great personalities for sure.
Oh.
All right.
Hilarious.
Let's have your top five.
All right. My top five, number five would be Gary Walker. I thought Gary was extremely productive, was kind of a character himself, but a very good football player, made the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
Number four, he helped form what was the best tackle tandem in the league at that time, bar none, Leon Searcy.
Okay.
Number three, Mike Peterson. Came over from the Colts, extremely productive, both as a weak side, middle linebacker. Whatever he played, he was productive. He would run through a wall for a coach. Number two, Kyle Brady. Would Fred Taylor have had those magical year, that magical year or years, without Kyle Brady? I don't know. So to me, he was a huge part of that. I mean, he was a tackle-playing tight end. Probably one of the greatest blocking tight ends the league has ever had. And number one, I think, is very easy, Keenan McCardell.
Yeah.
Forming the Thunder and Lightning combination. And the reason I put him at number one was because I think, much like Andre Rison helped the both of them, I think Jimmy really thrived because of Keenan, because Keenan had the work ethic. Keenan was the ultimate competitor, and it was a competition between Keenan and Jimmy all the time. You know, each one of them wanted the ball, and if one didn't get it, the other, you know, they complain. And with Keenan, he ran beautiful routes. He had a knack for finding the hole. And Jimmy had some consideration, but he was a street free agent, so he really doesn't qualify for that. So, and a couple other guys that I kind of threw in there as maybe guys that I might consider, or that I did consider at first, Natron Means, but he was a waiver claim.
Yeah.
And Sammy Knight, I thought, was a tremendous pickup for this team. And that year, I don't know how 07, many games that he was responsible for winning, but in 07, he turned some games for the Jaguars.
You want to go?
Well, hold on. Let me just add two more from the glory days that I thought need to be mentioned. Joel Schmenge, who was a little-known free agent from the New Orleans Saints, who had an extremely productive career here. And then Dave Thomas.
Yeah.
Dave Thomas was a special teams demon.
Was he a free agent? Didn't he come in the expansion? He came in the expansion
draft.
Was he?
I think, yeah, for sure.
But I didn't know him. But, I mean, I want to throw those names out there because they were good football players.
Yep. Oh, yeah, he was a guy that could really – he tantalized you with his combination of size and speed and jumping ability.
And the hit that he had on Jerry Rice in the preseason.
97.
At San Francisco. Yep. Wow.
That was vicious.
I had pretty close to saying. I put – and it's remarkable when you think about these guys came in one class – I had Keenan 1 and Leon 2. I thought Leon, when you think about the bad free agent signings all around the league all the time who just don't work out, to get Keenan and Leon in one class, you know, I'm not sure that 96 through 99 era is close to the same without those guys. I had Peterson 3. I had Gary Walker 4. Jeff's not going to mention – I thought Lagerman for that first free agent signing class to get a guy like Jeff with the leadership,
checks in the mail.
He kind of
longevity, he's been here all these years, so
that he didn't, there are a couple of years he missed some time, but if your first draft pick can be Bocelli and your first free agent signing can be Lagerman, they really did set a tone for how that 5-year era was going to be, even though Jeff only played 3 of the years. A guy nobody mentioned, I'm not sure if players didn't think he was as good. I thought Eddie Robinson was a really good free agent signing for when they got him. He came in 96.
Yeah, it's part of that 96 class.
Jeff may have a different view on Eddie, but from a media point of view, to get Keenan, Leon, and Eddie in that one class, I thought stabilized a lot around the franchise.
You know, my lasting impression of Eddie Robinson is the interception at Vanderbilt Stadium in 98 when they were the Tennessee Oilers, and he spiked it at the feet of Coughlin on the sidelines. I can't get that out of my head. I mean, but I do remember some big plays against the Ravens in 97.
He wasn't a great player, but, if all your free agent signings are
– productive.
He was solid.
All right, here's my list. Keenan McCardell's number one for the obvious reason. I put Searcy 2, Kyle Brady 3, Gary Walker 4, and then I kind of went off the reservation. I put Chris Naoli 5 because as they were growing here, running the ball, with Fred and then with Fred and Maurice, Naoli was just he was an animal.
Yeah,
I mean, and the players loved him. I mean,
you don't have Kyle Brady on there?
Yeah, I did. I had him 3.
Okay,
I went McCardell, Searcy, Brady, Walker, and Naoli. I also threw Paul Spicer in there. He was a street free agent.
Yeah.
He came in October of 2000. No one knew who he was. Knew he'd been in Saskatchewan and Saginaw Valley State. And I don't really remember that game in Dallas that went to overtime, but he had a sack of Aikman and a strip that set up the overtime that what can I think of the receiver?
Witted.
Yeah, Alvis Witted caught the game winner. So I want to give Paul at least that shout out right there. So there you go. 5 best, 5 worst, and some other names thrown in there.
That was fun to do.
Yeah. It brings back a lot of memories. Yeah.
According to everybody's picks, the consistency was Keenan McCardell for the best. Everybody thought that. Mm-hmm. And I guess in looking at him, everybody had Bryce Pop at number 3. That was the most consistent as far as the worst.
Well, I think if you're going to go most consistent, the worst, Jerry Porter, Drayton Florence have to be.
Yeah. Yeah. They
just because they're the most recent, and it's just tough to look past.
And if I had to redo my list, I would put Jerry Porter number 1. Just because, I mean, everybody in the league knew that he was not a good guy.
Yeah.
And they gave him the money.
Well, and I would too, just because I like Cornell Lake so much. It was just the money was just so hard to overlook when you look at that. Just, I mean, a couple other guys to throw out there as I was looking down this list and remembering some of them. You remember Quentin Newyear?
Oh, yeah.
He was an unrestricted free agent. He ended up playing here for a couple of years and starting. That's a name. Ty Halleck was part of that locker room that was in 97 that had those – it had him and Jeff Kopp and Brant Boyer that were a really good special teams unit.
Yeah, those three hung together quite a bit.
They were knuckleheads. Let's see. Who else stands out? I guess that's about it. No, I guess not. Or Reggie Hayward.
Yeah, if Reggie didn't get hurt, he would have probably been right there in this top 5 somewhere.
Yeah.
But the Achilles injury obviously affected him in a big way. But, I mean, his first year when he came in here to do what he did, I mean, I remember at that first year, we're like, wow, that was a great acquisition.
Right.
But then the injury was what, got him away from that top 5.
Here's another guy that comes to mind, Deion Grant. You know, he came in here and played safety for 4 seasons.
Yeah, a decent player and really was at that point, they needed a guy who was pretty heady in the secondary, very smart, student of the game, could really probably coach, good football player.
And then you got to throw Kasim Osgood and Aaron Campman in from last year.
Yeah, and, you know, we don't have them on the list because it's only been 1 year. Right. You know,
but Osgood was a big
They
time.
Can make the bad list after 1 year.
But you can't,
but
make,
you
the
can't
good list.
Make the good list after 1 year.
Osgood's pretty close, though. I mean, the things he did on special teams this year, we marveled at some of the plays that he made.
Yeah, it was pretty strong. Hey,
and for what they paid for him.
By the way, as promised, for those people that are listening, I did today spend time watching tape of some of the Jaguar draft picks. When we come back, we can go to whichever guy – One of three guys that you want to do.
Okay. We'll take this break, come back, and talk about one of three. Jaguars this week on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. Hey, before we move on and talk about one of the three players that Logs has looked at on tape, a couple more names as we're banding them about during the break. Zach Wiegert.
Yeah. Was tackle and guard.
Yep.
Big physical blocker. Good player.
Just about everything they needed. Played to tackle when they needed him. And how can we forget Clyde Simmons and everything he meant to this team?
Yeah, you were relating a story that when you stayed here to do Coughlin's show the day that we were playing the Broncos in the preseason, which was the day that they actually signed Clyde Simmons and let go Corey Mayfield.
Right.
The night before the preseason game in the hotel, which was a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And Clyde comes into the preseason game, and they outfitted him with pads and equipment that he's never worn, and he's thinking, well, I'm just going through, stretch and warm up, and he ended up playing like 20-something snaps in the game.
Welcome to Camp Coughlin.
And I remember Clyde kind of looking at me in the first half going, what in the world, because he hadn't played yet. And then Coughlin just freaked out at halftime, actually took his arm across the table of Gatorade that was in cups, and the Gatorade literally flew all over Clyde Simmons. And then in the second half, he played like 20-something snaps, and he came up to me after the game. He says, this how it is all the time? I said, yeah, pretty much.
He said, what in the world did I do? All right, you watched tape of which three players today?
Today I actually watched Rod Isaac, the cornerback from Middle Tennessee State, and that was fun watching some of those plays just because some of the stadiums they were playing in.
Yeah.
Very small. I also watched Cecil Shorts, kind of the same thing, small schools. And then I watched two games of Blaine Gabbert, the game against Oklahoma and then also the Insight Bowl against Iowa. And I really want to watch a few more games on him before I kind of comment on him. So
watch the Nebraska game in the rain from his first year as a starter. He only has two seasons
as
a starter.
They may not even have that.
Okay. That was a game
on
ESPN on
a
Thursday night.
They've got last year on film that's accessible to me. So, but take your pick. I mean,
let's talk about Cecil Shorts, and we'll save Gabbert for next week.
Yeah, the thing that when you go to the combine, and John, you've probably seen this before. You go to the combine, you stand in your underwear, and you stand front, and you turn sideways. The guy's ripped, 5'11 and a half, and it's hard for me to kind of grade him somewhat, and also Rod Isaac somewhat, because they're playing against smaller schools, and I'm not a trained scout, so it's difficult for me to project, but I can tell you what I saw. I saw a guy who has very good hands, runs very good routes, that clearly was head and shoulders above the competition across the field from him. And the thing that I like most about him is that he competed for every ball. He never was gun-shy going across the middle. And once he got the ball in his hand, he had a real nice burst. And then there was some clips of him, and I'm assuming that it was at the East-West Shrine game there where he was in the slot, that he just looked very, very good. And that's what they're saying, that he kind of can project as a slot-type wide receiver. But I liked what I saw. But here's the thing. It's hard for me to say, well, boy, you see that at Mount Union, what's it going to look like in the NFL? But he clearly was a dominant player at Mount Union.
Well, and can you judge the guy that you watched for a couple of years, Pierre Garçon? What did they think of him coming out?
It sounds like sort of the same deal. Pierre and Cecil are pretty different in one respect. Pierre, when they brought him in, they kept saying, this guy is just dazzling athletically. And, you've seen it. Pierre is off the charts in terms of his athleticism and his ability to make big plays. What he struggles with is his consistency. Cecil sort of sounds like the opposite in that sense, in that he's pretty ready made, and he does a lot of good things, and he's very consistent from what I've heard. With Pierre, they knew it was going to take a year, and that it was going to be his second year when he came out and he was ready and he was up to speed because of the competition level. This team expects Cecil Shorts to be able to to contribute and push for that third position this year. So that'll be the X factor: is can you get ready that quick and can you make that adjustment?
Yeah, he appears to run really good routes. You know, can kind of sell. Keenan was one of the best at it, that he would sell the defensive back that he was going one way, and then next thing you know, he's taken off the other way, and he created great separation. And Keenan did that with his brain, and it appears that Cecil does some of the same things on film from watching him play. But it's kind of surprising. You expect to see a guy at Mount Union to look physically bigger than everybody else, but really didn't.
Right.
Because he's, 5'11", maybe 5'11 and a half, but physically big guy, real strong. Didn't show elite speed, but had a very, very quick burst. And when you watched him coming off the line at the, I think it was the All-Star game that he was playing in, when you watched his acceleration compared to some of the other guys that were from bigger schools, I mean, he was right there, with them, so. He's got some burst. He's got great body control. I think wide receivers got to have that. And, he reminds me a little bit when I was watching the film of a Hines Ward. And, when you read his background, kind of like a mm-hmm. Hines Ward. And I'm not saying he's going to be a Hines Ward.
It's pretty high praise.
But, a guy that was a quarterback, that made the conversion to wide receiver, which Shorts did, and very athletic, very tough. Not afraid of physical contact, so hopefully he can be that type of player.
Does a Mount Union guy struggle even more in a lockout year where his time to prepare has been diminished?
Well, for everything that, in fact, I had a chance to talk with a few of the people here that, personnel, and the thing that really impressed them the most about him was his maturity.
Mm-hmm.
And so having a person who's mature certainly would be able to get up to speed more so than a player who is not.
All right, everybody, that'll do it for our show this evening. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.